The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show alongside Haley Stasiak. I'm Jordan Hamm. A busy Wednesday, a lot to get to in the sports world. We had the World Series Game 1 last night, Suns taking on the Lakers tonight. We're going to cover all of that as well on this episode. We're going to have NFL Network reporter Steve Wyche. I sit down with him, talk about everything going on with the Cardinals. There's a lot happening on the field, a lot happening off the field. He helps us break all of that down. I also sit down with NFL Network senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano. You have fantasy football questions. He has fantasy football answers. And then Haley is sitting down with, in Talk to the Lopes with GCU head cross country coach Sarah Slattery. So a lot of really good stuff here over this next hour. And then, of course, we have the Friday Night 360 AZ preview show. Last season of the regular season for high school football. Haley and I are going to be breaking down a lot of what's going on. Been busy on that front
yes,
as well.
Definitely has.
But let's go ahead and get started with our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And Haley, World Series Game 1 last night. We didn't know if it was going to happen. There was quite a bit of weather in the Northeast. They were able to get the game in, and it was a pretty darn good game.
You know, for Clayton Kershaw and Chris Sale, for this game to be back and forth like it was, and then for the Red Sox, obviously, to come up on top as big as they did, but Kershaw and Sale only going five innings, that was, I think, the biggest surprise. I don't think I personally expected it to be as close as it was. I'm kind of thinking it's Red Sox in four. But, yeah, for two of the Major League Baseball's top pitchers to only go five innings in Game 1 of the World Series, that was pretty the storyline there.
I wonder how much of the weather played a factor. I wonder how much, obviously, the Dodgers had a lot less rest than the Red Sox did. You never really know in Game 1 how these teams are going to react. Obviously, both of these teams have been there in recent years. It's just interesting to see just always how they react. For the Red Sox, interesting stat, Xander Bogaerts is the only one from that 2013 World Series team that's on that roster. So to think how much turnover they've had and to still have the lineup that they do, pretty incredible that they are where they are. I was just intrigued by how poorly Clayton Kershaw started in the first inning, but then he recovered really well.
And that's typical Clayton Kershaw right there. I mean, you're not going to necessarily get to Clayton Kershaw and he's going to be one of those pitchers that's kind of down and out. He's going to bounce back because that's just true Clayton Kershaw fashion there. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the rest of this series.
I need to eat a little bit of crow because this past offseason I said, you know, when we were talking about J.D. Martinez and the Diamondbacks doing everything they could to bring him back, I said, look, there's probably a pretty good chance that we don't see the J.D. Martinez in the future. What we saw in the second half of last year with the Diamondbacks, I was very wrong because he's having an unbelievable series, an unbelievable postseason, unbelievable regular season. And kind of crazy to see him take that spill when he had that RBI double, was about to be a triple. You can just see, and that's kind of the scary thing. You know, they take really good care of the field when there's weather involved. The base is still wet, still very slippery. You could see Fenway Park doesn't have a lot of foul ball territory, but a lot of that, you could kind of see the glassiness of standing water. And you saw David Freese in the first inning kind of lose track and slip up a little bit. So hopefully the weather is all behind us. And I'm sure once they get back to LA, they won't really have too much of an issue.
That's what's so great, I think, about this series, though, too, is you've got both coasts. It's not like
both
last
extremes,
year where it was like the Astros and the Dodgers and you were still in temperate climates. No, like these are extremes here. So
lot of fun with that. Suns taking on the Lakers. Suns, the last time they played at home, got a big win in the season opener. I was at that game, was very impressed with what they could do. It was also one game, you know, a lot. And when you hit 19 three-pointers, that can cover up a lot of issues. I think some of those issues have been exploited by the Nuggets, by the Warriors, two really good teams that are going to do that. But they have a potential big statement game against the Lakers, who are 0-3 right now. You're going to be at that game.
Yeah, right? And the thing that I'm looking at here, too, is the Suns don't want to be that team that let the Lakers get their first win. Mm-hmm. Especially just the Suns have taken 14 of the last 22 here. Devin Booker's pretty good against the Lakers just by the numbers from last season. So, I mean, for LeBron James to come in town, that's always a big deal. It's never just, oh, yeah, it's another Suns game. No, this is a big Suns game. For to happen early, it's the first of two meetings between the Lakers and the Suns this season. So, yeah, I'm excited to see the Suns in person in real action. I know I watched some in the preseason, haven't gotten a chance to watch a full regular season game yet, but excited to see how all of this is meshing in person.
Yeah, there aren't many stars where no matter how good the team is or what stage of the career they're in, when they come to town, people perk up. LeBron James is one of those. But I think, obviously, after game one, I was on the Brad Sesmat show. I called in and was talking to Brad, and he was like, so, playoffs, you know, look at all them, hit all those threes and everything. And it's basketball in October.
Yeah.
You know, so much of this is overblown. You know, once you get to even like about the second half of the season, that's when you start to see these teams kind of take shape and everything like that. And we saw that with LeBron when he went to Miami and he had Dwayne Wade, who was in his prime, and Chris Bosh in his prime. Mm-hmm. They struggled early, too. So I think everyone's still just kind of ironing out. It seemed like I've seen the Lakers play a couple of times. It seems like with the Lakers, you have four guys who are looking at LeBron saying, okay, go do something.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Like, I don't want to get in the way, rather than working with him. Because when everybody says, you know, they make the comparisons to MJ. He's more of a Magic Johnson. He's at his best when he can distribute to other guys, stuff like that. So I think when they're finally starting to mesh, that's what you're going to see. But there's a lot of young talent on this team that is still just trying to figure it out. So a lot to certainly take away from that. On the Cardinals, real quick, let's talk about that. Monday, Patrick Peterson, reports came out. We haven't heard from Patrick Peterson yet. I believe he will be speaking later today, but reports came out that Patrick Peterson was requesting a trade. Steve Wilkes has said, we're not trading Patrick Peterson. It's still kind of a staring contest as we approach next week and the trade deadline. What thoughts do you have on that?
Well, you know, you talk about the Suns and it's how it's October basketball, and we're not jumping to conclusions about the playoffs in October here, people. Kind of the same thing. These are reports. These aren't factual things for what we know from the source. So I think, I mean, I'm one of those people that likes to wait for the facts, and I'm not someone who likes to speculate. Obviously, with our preseason Friday Night 360 show, I was like, hey, I'm not speculating all this. Once the game starts getting going, then we'll really be able to determine what's going on here. But, I mean, the Cardinals, this is not a good time for this for the Cardinals. You do not want something like this happening when you are where you're at. And I think this adds a little bit of unrest here in this locker room. You don't want one of your star players to be doubting this team. And I think that's the biggest thing here. I don't think it's a matter of losing the talent. I think it's a matter of just the overall structure of this team right now.
I think inside the locker room, they probably already knew there was some unrest. Now it's just public, so now they have media in their face daily about everything that's going on. So it seems like even before the Cardinals were trying to, you know, kind of keep this held together with masking tape and just try to, you know, get some wins and kind of work their way up the NFC West. But obviously when you have your captain and an all-pro cornerback requesting a trade, that is certainly going to cause a lot of conversation and debate on what the Cardinals should do. So I'm going to get to that with Steve Wyche coming up next. We're going to go very in-depth on the new offensive coordinator, Byron Leftwich, Josh Rosen, and Patrick Peterson. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show. To now help us break down everything that's been going on with the Cardinals, both on and off the field, is Steve Wyche of the NFL Network. You can follow him at Wyche89 on Twitter. You can also see him every Monday on NFL Network's The Aftermath at 12 noon Pacific. Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
So it's been a busy couple of weeks, both on and off the field, for the Cardinals. Just what have been your big takeaways for this team going the past few weeks?
Well, I mean, they're just not a good football team. Right now, they can't score. The defense is facing tremendous pressure because of, you know, the giveaways. You've seen, they made the change at quarterback. Now they've made the change at offensive coordinator. These are things that happen to teams that have yet to figure out what they are. And, you know, and I said earlier in the season, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Mike McCoy, because this was a huge year for him, because he gets fired as head coach of the Chargers. Then he gets fired midseason as offensive coordinator with the Broncos, and now he's let go again. And this is tough for Josh Rosen or any young quarterback. Even though Byron Leftwich, who took over for Mike McCoy as the OC, has been the position coach that Rosen has had the most contact with, you know, he's, if Byron continues to be the OC, there's going to be changes. There's going to be development. And while you're trying to win ball games and plan week to week for your opponent, there's not a lot of time to necessarily grow and learn when you make a midseason change. So this is kind of every coach's worst fear when they draft a rookie quarterback, that they've got to make changes to get things together with the entire team. So it's just a lot of things going on right now, but it's just not a good football team right now.
As you mentioned, Mike McCoy is out, Byron Leftwich now in. What do you know about him as a coach? You know, we hear so much about his playing background, but what stylistically is so good about him as a coach?
Well, the one thing about Left, and heard this, and Bruce Arians was kind of promoting him, he's the guy who's going to be fast-tracked in terms of he's got an incredible football IQ. He communicates well with players because he's not that far removed from the game. And he was somebody who went through, you know, a few coaches, a few coordinators, a few systems. So I think the fact that he is, you know, a football junkie, he is relatively young and can really relate to some of these players. And they know who he is. Most of these younger players know who Byron Leftwich is. So he comes in with some sense of credibility. And again, the fact that, I mean, I think people see how hard he works. And this is from outside the building, talking to people around the league. You know, Leftwich is now an opportunity where, you know, he can be one of these guys, like we've seen with Matt Nagy and some of these other offensive coaches, who, if they show something relatively early in their careers, meaning creativity, meaning the ability to develop and communicate, and not just at the quarterback position, because coordinators have got to, you know, wide receivers, running backs, blocking schemes. If he can show those type of skills, he's somebody who's going to be fast-tracked to be a head coach in 3 or 4 years.
Josh Rosen was taken 10th overall, took over starting duties very early on in his career. Byron Leftwich taken 7th overall in 2003, also wasted no time getting on the field. What does he need to do to help stabilize that position for Josh Rosen moving forward for this offense?
Well, I mean, the main thing he's got to do is, you know, is hope that is that the Rams or the Cowboys offensive line falls into his lap. But there's just so many different things going on with this team. The offensive line is not playing good. They just can't figure things out right now. The key thing to me is to somehow try and establish a ground game and get David Johnson involved. And I think that's the biggest head-scratcher for everybody who follows Arizona, is like, here's a guy who is just a stud, and he's just not being, you know, that dominant player that he was. And I saw this 2 years ago with Todd Gurley, you know, in Los Angeles. When they first moved out here, this guy was not a factor. I mean, they had no offensive identity. The play calling was all over the place. They had a young quarterback in Jared Goff, much like Josh Rosen, who had a lot of growing up to do, and they could not figure out how to establish a running game. In comes Sean McVay, and for all the whiz kid stuff we hear about him in the passing game and the schemes, it is all centered around the tailback. Not so much just a running game with Todd Gurley, but the short passing game as well. I think if Byron Leftwich can take, not necessarily some of the schemes, but some of the strategies that we've seen teams like the Rams use when you've got a young quarterback and a stud running back, and find out creative ways to get that player in single coverage or matched up where he's just got to make one player miss, that will be the best thing for this offense and for Josh Rosen to gain some confidence and to get some type of symmetry going offensively. Because, again, right now they're just all over the place.
Talking to Steve Wyche of the NFL Network. You can follow him at Wyche89, and he is on every Monday on the NFL Network's The Aftermath at 12 noon Pacific. On top of everything that's been going on with Josh Rosen and the offense, reports came out on Monday that Patrick Peterson was requesting a trade. When you have reports like that swirling around a team that has plenty that they already have to work through, just what does that do to the locker room and the front office when you have an all-pro type player potentially requesting a trade?
Well, clearly the damage has already been done. If this is true, and there's every occasion to believe that's the case, I say the damage has been done. I mean, you know, him making this trade and it becoming public, this trade request and it becoming public, is not going to do much more damage than the fact that in that locker room, he's fed up. I'm sure his teammates know about it. I'm sure he's not the only one that's fed up. Players hate losing. They have finite careers. And Patrick Peterson has only tasted success a few times since he's been with Arizona. Probably wants to get into a situation where he could potentially win. But when you ask for a trade, you got to be careful, because you could end up getting traded into a situation that benefits the team and not necessarily you. He could end up getting traded, you know, if he does get traded, you know, to a team that's got no shot of winning for 2 or 3 years, and he's in the same cycle, and then all of a sudden the supposed fresh start, you know, it ends up being just another, you know, situation that's just not healthy for you. So, again, I mean, I don't know if they would trade him. We heard Steve Wilks, the head coach, come out yesterday and say, we're not trading him. But, you know, I just, if they get an offer they can't refuse, you know, you saw what the Raiders did with Amari Cooper. I mean, it was stunning. They were able to get a first-round pick for him. And if somebody comes with that, they've got to listen, because right now this team is not going to win this year. And if Patrick Peterson is going to be one of your defensive centerpieces and you're not going to trade him, then you've got to kind of, you know, use some nuance in how you're going to handle him moving forward, because he's a veteran player who young players follow. You could turn a locker room south, you know, if he's unhappy. So you've got to judge all those things. But I think at this point, based on where he is in his career and what the value you could possibly get for him, because he's still one of the top corners in the league, somebody comes to you with a strong offer, you know, you can't necessarily look the other way.
Let's jump ahead a few steps. Potentially, if they do consider going ahead and trading Patrick Peterson, what would the market look like for him right now versus maybe waiting until the offseason?
No, the market now would, you know, those are great questions. I think now, if you've got some quarterback needy teams who would be willing to part with a first-round pick, you know, you've got to change it. You could always run the risk, if you don't do it, Patrick gets hurt, and then all of a sudden his value gets diminished, or he just has a poor season, and his value gets diminished. And if you've got a team right now that's in the hunt, that needs a corner, you know, be it Kansas City, be it whomever, yeah, it might be a late first-round pick, but the way things are going, you're also going to have your own high first-round pick. So, again, if you can double up on first-round picks and you're in a rebuilding process, which the Cardinals clearly are in, they were trying to stay competitive while they're rebuilding. Now they might be looking at more of a teardown to start all over. Again, you've got to consider it, because, you know, there's some teams out there making moves. And if his name becomes available, I mean, you don't find cornerbacks like Patrick Peterson, who's 28, still has 3, 4, 5 strong years left in him. Those don't grow on trees. So, you know, you saw the Saints make a move for Eli Apple today. So, again, if someone comes with it, I think the Cardinals have to listen.
There's still plenty going on still on the field for the Cardinals. They're gearing up for a game against the 49ers. How do they shut out all this noise that's going on off the field and try to prep for a division foe this Sunday?
That's all they can do is prep for a division foe. You know, they've got to hope that whatever conversation they have with Patrick Peterson, if they're going to move him, they just tell him, hey, look, be a pro, or we're going to try to get you out of here, you know, if we can, but we're going to do stuff that's good for the team at the same time. We're not just going to accept a bad trade to make you happy. And hope that everybody can be professional. This is a very, very tough situation for a first-year coach to deal with, because the biggest obstacle any first-year coach has to prove to his players is that he knows what he's doing. And when you lose this many games, and you already fire your OC, you got your star player, you know, reportedly asking for a trade, there might be some people wondering, okay, what's going on here? you know, you already had your general manager, you know, who was suspended during training camp. Like, what type of organization am I dealing with right here? So you have to hope that Steve Wilks, who I think is a quality human being and a good football coach based on everyone I spoke to, can get into that auditorium this morning, wrap his arms around his team, and tell them, no matter how you're feeling, you're being paid to do a job. You do it to the best of your ability, because if you do, we're going to get some things turned around here. There's still plenty of talent on this team. They have just got to now get into a position where this anchor isn't completely dropping at full speed and try to win some ball games, because that makes everybody feel better. And they've got an opportunity against a Niners team that's kind of going through some of the same things they're going through.
Steve, great stuff. As always, we appreciate the time.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.
That was Steve Wyche of the NFL Network. Again, you can catch him on the NFL Network's Aftermath at 12 noon Pacific and at Wyche89 on Twitter. You have questions, and Michael Fabiano has answers. The NFL Network senior fantasy analyst now joins us to answer all of your fantasy football questions. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So it's been a busy week on the trade deadline front. How do you see some of these deals that have already come through affecting fantasy football?
Well, so the first one came last week with Carlos Hyde going to Jacksonville. And the Jaguars, I think, are just trying to ensure themselves, hoping that Leonard Fournette can come back. But if he can't, well, Hyde will be the guy. The reports right now suggest Fournette will be back after their bye week in Week 10. Now, once he does come back, Carlos Hyde, I believe, is more of a handcuff and a guy that you could stash. And at some point, he could be waiver wire fodder, but Fournette has not been durable, so you have to concern yourself with that. The big winner in that trade, of course, is Nick Chubb, who is now the starting running back for the Browns and is going to see more than his share of touches. Could be a league winner, actually, and a very good RB2 moving forward. Does have a tough matchup this week, but with four teams on a bye, you probably have to start him. And then the other big trade was involving my beloved Dallas Cowboys, who once again overpaid for a wide receiver, gave a first-round pick, and I'm sitting flashes of Joey Galloway and Roy Williams are going through my head, and I'm thinking, I mean, maybe a second or a third, but a first? And this guy's a free agent in 2020. So the fantasy implications of it, heck, change of scenery, maybe that's going to be good. We'll see. The Cowboys are predominantly a run-based offense, so I don't know if he's going to see a ton of targets, but I mean, he's clearly going to be their number one wide receiver, but I don't see a huge increase in terms of his value. Dak Prescott will see a little bit of an uptick, although his uptick in the last couple of weeks has been because he's been running with the football. On the Raiders side, more targets for Jordy Nelson. Maybe Martavis Bryant becomes fantasy relevant. Jared Cook, although it's very hard to trust him regardless, maybe he'll see a few more targets in that passing game as well. But the trade is probably much ado about nothing at the end of the day when it comes to fantasy football, because I just don't see Amari Cooper being significantly better in Dallas, although I hope it is the case as a Cowboys fan. I don't see it being a significant move where he's going to suddenly become a very reliable fantasy wide receiver.
Over the past few years, we've seen John Brown be a deep threat, but it seems like he's getting a lot of high-volume passes from Joe Flacco this year. What do you make of John Brown in the first half of this year?
Yeah, and he was a guy that in the preseason, you know, I talked about as being a potential bargain in drafts, and that's exactly what he's become. And remember, he was a former 1,000-yard receiver in Arizona, so it's not like he had never been fantasy relevant, just been dealing with injuries and health issues. But after last week, you know, you put up 134 and a touchdown. You know, the Saints' defense is not very good against the pass, but still, he put up a very solid stat line. He's now had 19-plus points in, I believe, three games this season in PPR league. So I thought it would be Michael Crabtree who would lead this team in targets, but so far, John Brown has been the leader in terms of fantasy points.
Latavius Murray coming off of a couple of really good performances, and as Dalvin Cook is still on injured, seems like he's getting more and more carries. What do you make of him, and is this a potential pickup for people if he is on the waiver still?
Yeah, he should be off the waiver wire, and if he isn't, you got to pick him up. I don't know what happened to Dalvin Cook. It's sort of a mystery because, remember, last week he put in a full practice, and then the next day it was reported he put in a full practice, but he actually didn't practice at all. And then Friday he didn't practice, and then he's inactive. So I wonder if he had some sort of setback. And that concerns me because Dalvin might not be back until maybe week 10, because week 11, they have a bye in week 10, so it would be week 11, and then they have to play the Bears. So this has been a problem. Dalvin, obviously talented, got hurt last season, has been hurt most of this season. Latavius Murray needs to be owned in all leagues. Does have a tough matchup this week. Keep in mind that the Vikings are going up against the Saints, and the Saints have been really good against the run this season. So he's a flex starter for me this weekend.
When you look at some of these offenses, I feel like we're deep enough in the season now to know who is a good offense, who is a bad offense, and who is a very bad offense. In the case of Arizona, I think you could put Arizona in that last category. If you don't have an elite defense on your roster, could it be a situation where there might be a handful of teams where you're just streaming if their offense is going up against a potential free agent defense? You go ahead and pick them up?
No doubt, and the Cardinals are one of those defenses. I mean, honestly, the Cardinals defense is a good streamer this week against the 49ers. Really good. The biggest no-brainer is, I mean, anyone who's facing the Bills. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Colts gave up, put up 19 last week on them. So this week they're playing the Patriots, and the Patriots, if they're available in your league, and they might be, because a lot of people didn't want to play them against the Bears last week, which turned out to be a mistake, but they could be available, so pick them up. So, yeah, the Cardinals are a team to stream against. The 49ers are a team to stream against. Jacksonville's a team to stream against. So you got the Eagles this week in London. And as I mentioned, the Bills are also a team that you want to target. And the Cowboys, when they're playing on the road, I mean, look at the numbers. They're off this week. They have a bye. But when the Cowboys are on the road, I mean, look what the Redskins did to them this past week. They had a very solid fantasy performance.
You mentioned going to London, and I wanted to ask you, as more and more teams go to London, are you seeing fantasy numbers affected at all, having to deal with so much travel and potential, you know, just different situations?
No, not really. Last week we all missed Melvin Gordon, especially those of us who have him on our fantasy team, but the numbers, Phillip Rivers put up a nice stat line. Deion Lewis put up a nice stat line. You know, I feel like there was maybe initially when they started doing the international series in these games that they would affect the fantasy point production from some players, but that really hasn't been the case. This week you've got the Eagles, you've got the Jaguars. I'm playing the matchups, looking at the numbers, looking at the trends. The same way I would if they were playing here in the States.
Kerryon Johnson having a couple of really nice weeks, and he also sets up nicely for any team name puns that you may have if he's
your
roster. Moving forward, what do you see out of him for the rest of the year?
I hope they keep giving him the ball. And remember, this past week, Theo Riddick was inactive, so keep tabs on his status because he's kind of their pass-catching running back. But I mean, I hope Matt Patricia just keeps giving him 18 to 20 touches a game because he's that good. He's the best running back they have on their roster. He proved it last week. Now, the matchup was good. I mean, you know, the Dolphins' defense against the run is terrible. So this week, he's got a little bit of a tougher test against the Seattle Seahawks, who are coming off a bye week. But four teams on a bye, I mean, at worst, he's a flex starter. And if he continues to see volume, he could end up being a very useful option down the stretch as you get closer to your fantasy postseason.
One of the interesting backfields, I think, in the NFL fantasy-wise is Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. Both of them can put up points, but it seems like it's kind of split down the middle. Just what do you make of that backfield, and if you have one of those guys, how you should utilize them?
You're playing them, and last season they were utilized in a similar fashion as to what they were this past week, and they were both top 10 fantasy running backs in PPR leagues. So I get it. You know, Kamara's value has dropped, but we kind of expected that. He wasn't going to score 33 points a game like he did over his first 4 weeks. It just wasn't going to happen. The volume was going to decrease. That's why they sort of rested him against the Redskins in that game that everyone was freaking out about Kamara not getting enough touches. And it's a split backfield. This is a team that knows how to utilize both of these backs. And we saw last season that both of them can be productive in the same games, at the same times. I wouldn't be too freaked out about it. And they've got a matchup this week against Minnesota where there could be some points put on the board. So I say both of these players, Kamara's still a one. Maybe he's not a top 5-1 at this point, but he's still a one. And Ingram, to me, is a two or a flex, probably closer to a two.
Marlon Mack coming off of a huge week. Just how do you see him fitting into the fold for the Colts for the rest of the way?
Boy, the Bills made him look like Edgerrin James. I mean, it was ridiculous. He had a career game, and the matchup was right, and they gave him most of the touches out of that backfield, which is kind of what we were hoping for because it was a bit crowded, right? You got Robert Turbin, who's banged up. Nyheim Hines had been pretty decent in PPR. You've also got Jordan Wilkins in there. But We all were hoping that this would be the case with Marlon Mack moving forward, and you've got a matchup this week against the Raiders that makes Mack an RB2 slash flex player. No question about that. We'll see if that type of volume continues, but we do know one thing. Andrew Luck is playing very well, so Marlon Mack should see at least a decrease in terms of the number of stacked fronts that he's going to face. And if Luck keeps slinging it like he is, that offense could be pretty explosive, and Marlon Mack could be very useful down the stretch.
Kareem Hunt's been very effective in this first half of the season, especially in those PPR leagues, but he really came to play on Sunday night. Where do you see him fitting in to the running back hierarchy? Is he an elite back? Is he a really good back? Kind of somewhere in between? Where do you see him fitting into this fold?
Well, I mean, at this point, it's sort of Todd Gurley and everyone else, mm-hmm. you know? But he's right in there. I mean, he's clearly a top 10 back. And a lot of people freaked out after the first week when he had 49 yards and did nothing against the Chargers. And then ever since then, I mean, he's scored at least one touchdown in every game. And he had three last week against Cincinnati. He had one the week before against the Patriots. Even had a good game against the Jaguars and their stout defense, although it hasn't been so stout lately. But Kareem Hunt has been everything that you hope for and more. And keep in mind, a lot of people faded him until the second round. So he wasn't a first-round pick in a lot of leagues because there was chatter about, well, maybe they're going to throw the ball more, and they've got Sammy Watkins. They're not going to go downfield. They're going to go downfield more. Maybe they're not going to throw it to him in the passing game as much. He's been every bit as productive as he was last season. And if you drafted him in the second round, at this point, you got to steal.
Michael, there's a reason that we call you the Hall of Famer. We appreciate it.
You got it. Take care.
That was Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst for the NFL Network. Great stuff, as always, each and every week. And this is the Brad Sesmat Show.
Welcome in to Talk to the Lopes, our weekly segment keeping you up to date on all the happenings with GCU Athletics. I'm Haley Stasiak. We're joined today by cross-country coach Sarah Slattery. Coach, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me this morning.
You're coming into the WAC Championships in Seattle this weekend. How have you seen this team develop this season?
This year we have quite a bit more depth on both the men's and the women's side. And a lot of it, our returners put in with distance running, it's just consistency over time and putting in, not real glamorous, it's putting in hard work and seeing it through, and our athletes really worked hard this summer and have been healthy for a few of them have been in the program for 2 or 3 years and now just like really putting things together. And we had some talented freshmen on the men's side. We had 8 guys come in this last year and they really gave us some depth, and so we're just a lot deeper and stronger this year.
You mentioned those freshmen on the men's side, Blake Bennett, Anthony Heron, Landon Rask, to name a few there. What is the value of having those younger runners step up and kind of support the veteran runners you have?
It just elevates everyone's game. In the past, we were relying on really top 5 score, and we were really relying on those 5 to we couldn't have any health issues or injuries come up because we really needed the 5 that we had. But now we have quite a few talented athletes that are coming in. And so each week, if something happens to someone, there's someone else that can step up and help them. If they want to be one of the top runners, that they're going to get pushed by their teammates and just make them better. So it's really helped, just the overall it's really helped them progress as a team and get a lot stronger having that having those freshmen, and they've come in with a lot more maturity than some freshmen we've had in the mm-hmm. past.
Daniel Flores is your top male runner. He was second team all WAC in 2017. Between last year and this year, how have you seen him grow as a runner?
Daniel is he's probably one of the most patient, calm and patient athletes I've ever worked with. Even in times where I've been a little stressed, he doesn't flinch. And I think that's very, he's willing to put in hard work and, see it through over time. And, it's hard to teach that in a lot of athletes. And, It's something that can really help you as a distance runner because it takes time sometimes. And he's really progressed. Like he hasn't had an injury the whole time he's been here, so it's really helped him. He's had 2 years of uninterrupted training, and each season has just taken some steps. And over time, he's become a very just been stacking that progress on top of each other and become a very good athlete. And I think he has a very good shot of he'll podium. I think he can podium this this coming week at conference and possibly be up there for the win.
On the women's side, Lindy Jacobson, Paige Hildebrandt, and Liz Balson lead the women there. What stands out most to you about these ladies?
I think what's awesome is it's hard to predict who's going to be our top runner each week. Our top four girls have been within 20 seconds of each other at every race. And our first two meets, Lindy Jacobson was our top runner. Our third race, Paige Hildebrandt was. And then Liz was our top athlete the last week. And they're all pushing each other, but in a great way. Like, it's a competitiveness where they want to see the best in each other and do well for the team. And it's very unique. It's sometimes hard to create that in a team environment, and we have a very good strong team chemistry, and Erica Wallace is right there behind them, and we have two girls right off of them with Michaela Cordova and Kenzie Fitzgerald. And I think if they can keep that group that pack tight this week, we could fare really well at conference.
As you enter the championships this weekend in Seattle and the season winds down, what was your message to the team at the beginning of the season, and have they lived up to what you were hoping they would in 2018?
Our big message was staying on the path. We call it the war path. Just putting minimizing our distractions, staying focused on what we're trying to do, and putting in the work over time. And it's not a big secret. It's just putting in the work day in and day out and keeping focused and positive. So our team's done really well. We've had each race, we've been getting better and better, and our athletes are, I think we have one of the most dedicated group of athletes in terms of the commitment that they have to have. We're up at practice. We practice up every day at 6 a.m. We're putting in, like I said, it's not glamorous. We're putting in lots of miles, cross training and weight training. But they're doing it with each day, waking up excited to get going and achieving those goals that we've set. So I'm really proud of this group, and I think that we're going to do something special this year.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck this weekend in Seattle at the WAC Championships.
Thank you so much.